It's Tennessee Titans talk, draft stuff.
Yep, 3 weeks away from the best night of the offseason and one of the best nights in sports, period.
Yeah.
It doesn't even have a game attached to it.
For we nerds.
Landon found out about, I don't know, a month ago we were at the SEC tournament and he found out that he had a final at Vanderbilt, literally at like, what, 6 or 7 o'clock on Thursday night, and he almost withdrew from classes.
I immediately emailed my professors like at the tournament during the timeout breaks asking them if there's any way I could change it, but nope. I have to take a dumb chemistry final. It starts at 7. It's 7 to 9 p.m. I'll probably get out a bit earlier, so I'm just going to have to...
You're just going to miss the first four picks.
Because the past couple times it's taken me like an hour 15. If I take an hour 30 because it's the final, I'll miss an hour and a half, which is like five or six picks. And I'll just have my laptop set up to record the draft, and I'll just hurry through the exam, race back to my dorm, and just catch up.
We won't text you about us trading up to get Stroud. We won't say that.
I'm not going to look at my phone the whole time.
If something like that had happened, John, I think you'd bust into the exam hall. I think
I think
guys, this is an emergency. Landon needs to judge people.
Landon doesn't need to be connected at all. If that were to happen, he just knows. It's in his blood.
He would just
like,
know.
It's like the Spider-Man Spidey senses. All the hairs in his arms stick up, and it's like, whoa.
He's like, someone in Nashville is doing something stupid related to football.
We gave up, and literally, like, I could just imagine, like, the actual trade details would just flow through, like, ESP right to Landon's brain. It's like, why the hell would we give up a first round this year, a first round next year, and a first round after that?
The only bad thing about this, because I've made my peace with having to miss the first couple picks, is you guys are planning on going to KC, and I was super excited about going. And if it weren't for this stupid final, I would be going with you guys.
Well, Land, it is only chemistry. I mean, come on.
Yeah, but sadly, that's my worst class, and I can't just not take the final and still pass anyway.
Well, I was going to say, let's hypothetically say you bomb the final. Where are you landing at grade-wise? A-?
What grade?
A-?
No, it's like 26% of my grade.
Right, so A-?
Are you trying to get him to cut the final, you dumbass? He goes to Vanderbilt, not Nashville State. This ain't Temple.
If this were my statistics class, I might be able to get away with it because that is so much easier than chemistry. But enough about real life stuff that doesn't matter. Let's talk about the draft.
Nathan, please leave that in where you come in. That's awesome.
All right, so the first pick in the draft for us is not the first pick. It's the 11th pick. I've heard nothing but quarterback talk, especially this year, because there's supposedly going to be four guys taken towards the top of the draft at quarterback. Every year, it's all they want to talk about is the quarterback. This is the worst year for that. I want y'all's take later, but let's talk 11. I think people listen to us because they want to hear what our dream but reasonable possible pick is at 11. We'll start with you, Landon.
The dream for me is that Paris Johnson, the left tackle from Ohio State, falls to us at 11. He falls past the Bears at 9, the Eagles at 10, who both could use him, and we take him. He can play right tackle or he can play guard. I don't care. I want another good offensive lineman because Dillard is the left tackle. Brunskill is the right guard. Apparently, Brewer is going to be our center because his free agent tender was $4 million, so we're paying Aaron Brewer $4 million when someone like Austin Eckler is making $6 million, so yippee.
Ooh,
but
woof.
But Paris Johnson, he played a year at guard, was pretty decent. Then last year he played left tackle and he was really good. Either he plays right tackle or he plays left guard, I don't care, just get another lineman. I prefer him to Skoronski just because he's bigger and he's stronger. Because the talk about Skoronski is, oh, even if he's not long enough to play tackle, you can kick him inside a guard. But I just don't see the functional play streak and anchor to play guard, especially with how our offense is run. Johnson, on the other hand, he can do that. So for me, it's Paris Johnson Jr. from Ohio State.
I was thinking about this, and I'm really happy for Dillard and all, and I they had to take a shot, but I don't know. The guy basically was a healthy scratch the whole season last year. I'm not saying they were dumb to do that, but I think they need more insurance. I don't want to go into the season with just what we have at offensive line. I just really don't. I really, unless something wild happens, John, I want a lineman at 11. I hate to pigeonhole myself like that, but there is going to be a decent prospect there. I think Johnson would be ideal. Just he fits our system, blah, blah, blah. He's got the measurements. I'd be happy with him at 11. But, I mean, Dillard literally, John, took like 30 snaps in Philly last year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for once, I don't know if we've ever done this, but I think we're all in agreement and unanimous about Paris Johnson. Like, that's pretty wild for us. I could see us going with Skoronski too, but I think we are all definitely in agreement. It's got to be offensive line. I like, you know, my point with Johnson is exactly yours. You know, I'm not sold on Dillard, So Johnson gives us that flexibility that he can.
And neither
come
is
back.
The
he
team.
Can play left tackle. Well, true. Right.
Because yeah, the contract is only guaranteed this year, and it's $10 million. So it's pretty much either we burn $10 million this year on a guy that doesn't work out, or we get a league average starting offensive tackle for $10
million. Right. So exactly. And I think Paris Johnson, you know, maybe they bring maybe in camp he you know, tries a couple different positions, but he's a natural left tackle. I was looking at some stats today, and I think it was 2021. He played right guard, gave up no sacks, but, you know, in Ohio State's offense, that's not really that hard to do. I mean, yeah they play some guys.
He can play guard, which is helpful. Like, but the thing is, he's like 6'5", and he has 36-inch arms. That's an offensive tackle.
Yeah.
Especially when it's hard to find guys with the measurables to play offensive tackle. Just throw him at right guard, kick Petit Freer into guard, or kick him out to right tackle, throw Petit Freer into guard, or have him be the swing tackle, and just roll with it, because you don't want to waste a guy's talents just getting your best players on the field where it's like, oh, Petit Freer can't really play guard, so we'll play Johnson at guard and Petit Freer at right tackle. No. You want the best tackles on the field. That's hopefully Dillard and whoever we take at 11.
I know we've talked about this before in previous years about making that switch from a left side tackle to a right side tackle, and it's a lot of footwork, a lot of technique, and the way you kick with your left leg as opposed to your right. And that could be a big change for a guy like Paris Johnson, but I think he's athletic enough and he's big enough and strong enough that he can handle it. He can switch. He can play left. He can play right. You know, if he's a tackle, obviously he's not going to be pulling. And I just think, yeah, like to your point, Lane, he's got to be on the field. We've got to play him. We have to have our best bigs on the field. And then that gives us some flexibility with a guy like, what's his face? The North Dakota State kid that we have. And I always forget his name.
Raidens.
Dylan Raidens. He's got flexibility. And maybe if Dillard falters at left tackle, maybe he steps in, because he played okay at left tackle. We just never gave him a shot.
Yeah, he just never played.
Yeah.
And as someone who liked taking the chance on Dillard, it does make, if we do go offensive line 11, it does make things a lot more trickier. Because before it was just, whoever we take at 11, all the top prospects are left tackles. They'll immediately slot in. Easy. But now Dillard is a left tackle only. He can't play guard, and he can't play right tackle, because he's pretty much like a pure pass blocker. So, and we're not going to, unless he's just awful, we're not going to bench a guy who we're paying $10 million to this year. So it either means whoever we take at 11 is either going to play outside of position for a year or two, or we have like the best right tackle, like guy that's actually played right tackle, is Darnell Wright from Tennessee, who I do like, but the other three guys, Broderick Jones, Paris Johnson, and Skoronski, are all better.
So, well, an 11
maybe
for
way
him
too
is,
early for 11 and way too late for 41. So
11 for him is rich.
Yes,
really. And 41, he won't be there.
And at 11, Andre Dillard is not the type of offensive lineman that you are adjusting your draft strategy around.
No, he's not. The guy played 30 snaps last year. Do not do that, Titans. And a good way to roll into that is, let's say Paris Johnson is there. Could happen. We're there. Landon's there in spirit with his hive brain, like you were describing earlier, John. And Paris Johnson's on the board, and they pick Njigba, the kid from Ohio State, at 11. What's your 30-second reaction to that, John? What would
my
be
initial
your
reaction,
immediate reaction?
My immediate reaction is we're not getting Marvin Harrison Jr. next year. That's a guy that we've all talked about that, you know, the nation has talked about as the best receiving prospect we have seen in a long time. And he taking another first round receiver this year means we're definitely out of those sweepstakes next year. Not to be in position, but we're not going to do three first round picks on a receiver.
It wouldn't make sense, but obviously, like, next year, like, the gem is Caleb Williams. But unless we're the worst team in football, which we shouldn't be, I hope, we aren't getting him. Then it's Drake May from North Carolina, who probably goes second. So if we're not picking top two after that, I mean, I'm sure there'll be a really good offensive lineman in there. But other than that, three receivers in a row wouldn't be great. But at the same time, Marvin Harrison is so freaking good that it might just not matter. It's like,
talking about Marvin Harrison and I ask you for your reaction on Jigba.
Well, could he go number one overall next year? It happen?
No, because
no, because Caleb Williams is.
Are you?
Really
good. I
Caleb
know
Williams
he is.
Would have to.
I know
kill
he is,
some people like, to not be the first overall pick.
I know,
Landon,
but man,
send us the text you're going to send us verbatim if it's Njigba over Paris Johnson.
I'm tentatively optimistic because he was amazing in 2021, but he's the kind of receiver that we've never utilized properly. He's a high volume slot target. We're never a high volume passing offense, and the hamstring issue that made a miss all of last season has me really worried because our medical staff seems to be just awful. Like, Vrabel was calling out David Long and some other guys, but when it's a team-wide thing, it's not a player issue. It's a fundamental issue at the core of the team. And a soft tissue injury like that with hamstrings, we've had hamstring issues in the past with Julio and Corey Davis. I would be squeamish, but kind of excited because Smith and Jigba is my wide receiver one. He's really the one guy in this draft class that pops on tape. Is like, yeah, this guy could end up being a top 10 receiver. Now, physically, he probably can't get very high in that top 10. He'd probably be like 9 or 10. But he's that one guy that just as a prospect right now, you can see him reaching that ceiling. But just the injuries and his role as a receiver, I just wouldn't feel great about it because, I mean, can you really trust the Titans to make a high volume slot receiver work?
Hey, we took Kendall Wright in the first round a billion years ago.
I was about to say, if I'm in Jigba's agent and they in the green room and they call the Titans, they call his name on the Titans clock, I'd be like, hey, just hold real still and pretend he didn't hear. I'd be like, no, we're not going there because they might as well be wearing leather helmets. They do not pass.
No.
But anyway, I mean, yeah, I said that because I said him specifically because he's likely to be there too. I don't know how our fan base would feel about that. I mean, if it's somebody off the wall, I think people are going to be pretty mad. But
I think
if it's somebody like that, but I don't know what we need for two, even if they're both wind up top shelf. I don't know what we need with two top shelf receivers if we're going to have this offensive line back out there. I don't get it.
Yeah, people would be happy with Smith and Jigba because he's the big name of this draft class because he went to Ohio State. He was awesome. He's risen back up in the draft process once he blew up the combine and looked great. I wouldn't have a problem with it if I could be assured that our offense is finally going to take some baby steps towards being a modern offense.
Yeah, I think that would be the narrative. Everybody would say, well, the Titans have signaled that they're going to modernize, but I don't know.
I don't see it. I mean, if it happens.
In a vacuum, I would love it, but things don't exist in a vacuum for us, and limitations, unfortunately, crash head-on with our limitations.
What would you guys say, percentage-wise, if I said, what's the percentage the pick is going to be in Jigba, Paris Johnson, or Skoronski from Northwestern? What percentage it's going to be one of those three guys at 11 for us? We'll start with you, Landon.
Well, just thinking about Smith and Jigba, barring a trade-up, really the only team that makes sense for him is the Bears at 9. But they got DJ Moore, they got Claypool, they got Mooney, they have a lot of other needs, so not him. Eagles don't make any sense, so Smith and Jigba will be there. Skoronski and Paris Johnson, they both could easily be gone because the Raiders at 7, the Bears at 9, the Eagles at 10 could all use him because they can play guard, they can play tackle, they need offensive linemen. So it's pretty much guaranteed that one of the three will be there. I would give it greater than 60. I mean, maybe I'm just hyper-focusing on these few guys because I like them as prospects and they fit immediate needs, but it's almost impossible to see us not taking an offensive lineman or Smith and Jigba in this draft unless someone falls really far or we trade it for a quarterback. Other than that, you really can't justify any other position.
Big fella, what's your percentage of one of those three guys? Are you feeling that it's going to be... I kind of feel it's more than 50% likely, maybe a lot more. We're going to see one of those three guys. What do you think?
I'd say somewhere in the 80s. I'm pretty confident it's going to be one of those three guys. Two guys I've seen in mock drafts and that I think could happen that I would be a little pissed about is Jordan Addison. I've seen a lot of people sneak him at 11. And one guy that I actually really like, I just don't know if it's high enough of a position to need, but maybe, I'm sure you can talk me into it, is Joey Porter Jr. I mean, getting him at 11 might transform our defensive our secondary.
I'm not a big Joey Porter fan. A lot of people have him like top 15 to 15-ish prospect. I didn't quite see it. I mean, he's good, but one, our cornerback room, the problem is injuries, which we do need to address, but at the same time, it's not like we're garbage. Like, Folden, when he can stay healthy, is good. Molden was good as a rookie. McCreary was okay, and he was on the field all the time. Quarterback is just... it would be a luxury pick, which is weird to say because our cornerback room isn't great, but we just have so many other needs that I just don't see the upside. And with Porter, I don't quite see that. I'm not seeing the flashes on tape that other people are, so I wouldn't like Joey Porter. Now, if Christian Gonzalez or Witherspoon were both there, which Gonzalez won't be there, maybe very slight chance of Witherspoon just because he's small and he's missed a lot of the pre-draft process. But other than that, like, I don't want a corner in the first round because we've proven we can get good quarterback play out of random people at times, and we have bigger needs. And with Addison, he's my wide receiver too. Him and Smith and Jigba in tier one. Just Smith and Jigba is the better prospect to me. He's got the higher ceiling, and he's the better player at 11. I have a really hard time not seeing Smith and Jigba on the board. Maybe someone trades up ahead of us because they think we'll take him. But even then, just give me an offensive lineman, because I like Addison, but he doesn't fit the framework, the prototype of what you want a first-round receiver to be. Like, Smith and Jigba, built to be an elite slot option, like 99th percentile agility scores. In the past, the guys that have been going in the top 10 are like Drake London, big X receiver, Garrett Wilson, Olave, James Williams, these fast field stretchers. Addison doesn't have that speed. He's not that big. He's a good route runner. Addison is like if Devontae Smith weren't just unbelievably awesome at the game of football. Which
he's 5'11". I mean, like,
yeah, he's 5'11". He's probably 175. He ran a 4.49. It's not good. But on tape, he knows how to play receiver. He's productive. He's good. It's just when you're taking a guy in the first round, especially at receiver, there's certain physical thresholds you need to hit. He hits none of them. And unlike Devontae Smith, who was the greatest college football receiver I've ever seen, he is not someone that you turn on the tape and he immediately is the best player on the field. Like Devontae Smith, he was short, he's slim, didn't run fast. You turn on the tape, he's the best receiver you've ever seen if you ignore the physical side of things.
Guys, let's talk 41. Same thing, same premise. What's your dream within reason pick at 41? We'll start with John first.
Honestly, I've been so focused on 11, I can't even get to 41. Just thinking about it, I really like Hendon Hooker. Lynn, I know you hate him, or maybe not hate him, but you just think he's going to be a terrible draft prospect. But if he's there, I say we do it.
At 41, it depends on where we go round one. If we go offensive line, which I hope we do, at 41, I think I wouldn't be opposed to doing double offensive line like we talked about before. It's so bad, especially because we'll need a left guard, and I don't like Brewer at center. John Michael Smith from Minnesota, people talk him up a lot. I didn't quite see that on tape. I mean, he's good. He'll be a solid NFL center, but it's just hard to see, like, compared to some other center prospects in the past where it's like, yeah, he could be amazing. If I'm taking a center in the top half of round two, I want to see the potential of him being a pro bowler, all pro caliber player. So he'll probably be the best interior lineman available. I wouldn't mind it because I don't believe Brewer is going to be a good center for us. But if if we went receiver, Marvin Mims Jr. from Oklahoma, he's flown under the radar compared to past Oklahoma receivers because the offense kind of fell apart when Lincoln Riley left, but he's had back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons, 20 yards per catch each year. He ran a 4.42. This is your prototypical Z receiver, your field stretcher, your burner. He's not the biggest, but he's not slender. He's got good play strength. He's got good just feel for the game. It's a bit of a reach. Most people have him in like the around 50 or 60. But to me, just this draft class, as far as outside receivers, is really, really lacking, especially in that early second round range. But before, it's like, here's a guy that we like that could have been a fringe first, but he slipped to the second, we'll take him. With this, it's like the best outside receiver outside of the day one guys is Mims and probably like Cedric Tillman. And Mims is a lot more explosive to me than Tillman. So
I've seen some mocks of Mims in the third, and I think there's no way, because I would be happy with Mims at 41.
I think people are just a bit late to catch up with him because I'm not really sure. It's just weird because he was incredibly explosive and efficient. He ran really well. He tested well. He will for sure go, I will say, in the top 50 picks, and it won't be a surprise. People are just late to catch up to him because they were following so many other names, but productive, really fast, feel for the game. It's that guy does not last very long.
I said Hendon Hooker, but you know, after Landon mentioned double up on O-line, I think I like that strategy a lot more. So I don't think a guy like Osiris Torrance will be there, but that would be awesome. Like if he were,
I think he's a little overrated watching his tape. And so
but
I don't
for
know,
second
but,
round,
but,
I think,
but I thought Kenyon Green was overrated and he went like in the teens. So I think Torrance could go in the 30s.
What about Joe Tippmann out of Wisconsin?
I exclusively don't learn anything about the Big Ten linemen because I know you're going to basically be like, like Facebook friends with them. So that's your job, pal. You tell me about that guy.
I think he's very underrated. I do love is he's a big old nasty lineman. He has a mullet. So sign me up. Like he could be a dude that is an immediate starter at center. And
yeah, I Michael Schmitz to Tippmann, but I've seen a lot of buzz about Schmidt's going a lot earlier, as far as like maybe like he sneaks into the end of the first or he's an early second. So if Schmidt weren't there, I wouldn't mind tipping him in. And he is, he does have the size to play guard because he's 6'6".
Yeah, well, I was going to say, he is a little tall for center. Yeah,
Landon didn't throw cold water on your idea there, John, but just kind of lukewarm water. He's like, I mean, I like him if the actually good guy's not there. I'd be okay with it.
If it's not cold water, it gives me a little credibility here. So I'm feeling pretty good.
I wouldn't mind because as far as scouting centers go, if they're not like a Creed Humphrey or I'm playing as someone, but they're not like Creed Humphrey, if they don't explode off the tape, it's like, wow, this guy is amazing. I can tell like who's good and who's bad, but I can't like differentiate the little minute differences where it's like, yeah, this guy's a little bit better. This guy's a little bit worse at this one thing. And here's how it'll affect the NFL. So I wouldn't mind him per se, but another option at interior offensive line is Avila from TCU.
I was wondering if you're going to say him.
Rock solid, high floor guard. Pretty much just throw him in at left guard, be done with it. He'll be solid for the extent of his rookie contract. Watching him, I did notice there are more struggles than some of the blurbs and write-ups about him let on, just because he is short and he does have kind of short arms position, but he is still solid at guard. You can kind of not get away with it, but it's less of an issue. And just the body of work, I mean, this is a guy that's been starting for 4 years in the Big 12. He's battle tested. He's played all over the line. Just hit a single. Maybe he's a double. That's okay with me, because this team right now is not in the position to where we need to be worrying about, oh, this guy's only a starting guard. We can't take him the second. After what we saw last year, I would kill just to have a league average left guard at 41.
Yeah, absolutely. And 41, I want a good player. I wonder if they're going to pass on tackle and hit it with the second and the third round. When you guys talk about the depth there, but I just hope there's somebody good to take. I hope they do not overthink it.
Yeah, we've seen that time and time again, and it could very well happen. But I get the sense that Rand Carthen is, he's been in the trenches, and they were saying with the Niners, he didn't get to pick in the first round, but post first round, he was the guy making decisions and, you know, kind of farming in those picks. So I don't think he'll freak out. I mean, look how great that Niners roster is and has been for a while. I think he had something to do with that, if not everything, but he had something to do with that. And I don't think he's too big. I don't think he's, you know, too big for the moment. I think he will be calm and collected. I mean, look at all the pressure right now to sign Simmons, and he's just kind of handling everything. So I think he'll be fine. It hits a nerve with me. So I don't want to get too deep into it because I might fly off at the handle.
Hey guys, real quickly before we get out of here, we've talked about 11. We talked about 41. What's the biggest story around the NFL or related to the NFL draft? Just kind of around the lake. A lot of weird, fun kind of stories brewing. We'll start with you, John.
Mine is, what the hell is the deal with Lamar Jackson? Like, obviously they want to either get a deal with him done before the draft or trade him before the draft, because that means 23 and 24 draft capital. I want to know what happens there. And, you know, like, that could have a pretty big ripple in the entire league in the draft.
Yeah, it's strange because I get the feeling that other teams are waiting out the Ravens because there isn't this insane market like there was for Deshaun Watson last year. Teams aren't clawing over one another to offer up all their draft picks to pay Lamar like they were for Watson.
Oh, I was going to say, I think the Ravens are also praying that the Eagles come to some sort of agreement with Jalen Hurts and that it isn't Deshaun Watson money. And then they can be like, oh, well, look, see, there's the market.
I mean, Hurts will probably get 45 to 50 because that's the going right now. And it does seem like Lamar is pushing for 50 and above, but it seems like he's more hung up on the guarantees.
Yep.
It just seems like the market isn't quite there because just Lamar's injuries the past couple of years and the style of quarterback he is don't make him a foolproof superstar quarterback. Because you do have to adjust your entire offense to build around him. He's missed the end of the past two seasons with injuries. You're going to have to pay him a lot of money. Rushing quarterbacks are at greater risk of being injured. Those are all issues. And that's why no one has jumped the gun now. But when we get to the week of the draft and teams can kick the draft capital down a year, we will see teams start going after Lamar, because if you're giving up future first for Lamar, and assuming he doesn't get hurt and you don't bottom out, those picks are in the 20s. Let's say you give up the 24th pick twice, you win your division, you lose in the wild card twice. You will give up those two picks to get Lamar Jackson. You should, at least. NFL as a collective, all these teams that need quarterbacks, unless you're just dead set on getting a rookie this year, so like Carolina, Houston, probably Indy, I can understand them. You draft a rookie that you like here, you're paying them a fifth or a tenth of what Lamar is making, and you roll with it. Other than that, so many teams have bad quarterback play, and this is a guy, everyone talks about the former MVP stuff. Can he reach that level again? No. But at the same time, we've seen down the stretch when he is injured, Baltimore's offense just collapses, even beyond losing your starting quarterback like every team probably would.
You don't think he could be MVP level again?
I think he could, but I think that was just the perfect storm of everything going right, and it could, but it's just, I don't think he'll get to that level, but he'll be really good. And the thing with him is he's a floor-raising quarterback, an offense, not a ceiling raiser, just with his limitations as a passer, but his rushing ceiling is so unbelievable. It just makes an offense so much better than the sum of its parts, like we see with Baltimore. He goes out, Tyler Huntley, or whoever they have at quarterback, isn't as good of a rusher as him. Also worse passer, but its main thing they lose is the rushing. Their offense falls apart. They go from being average with not having good talent to being pretty much as bad as anyone in that bottom tier just from losing their quarterback. And it's not even just the results, it's the on-field process. He covered up so many bad things on that offense, on that roster, Greg Roman's play calling, and that if you have a good defense, he lets you kind of cheat the system in a way, because you don't need to build a ton and give him a ton of support in terms of the offensive line, the running backs, because he's Lamar Jackson. He's going to run for 1,200 yards, and it's going to make everyone's life so much easier that doesn't matter. So I do think in about 2 weeks' time, we'll hear some more Lamar buzz, and he will be signed around or right after the draft, because someone is going to lose out on a quarterback. They're going to be looking at the future. They're going to be looking at who they have, and they're going to think about, if we get Lamar, we can contend this year. We can make the playoffs. It's better to give up a couple late round first and get this guy versus being stuck in mediocrity for a long time and praying we get lucky in the draft. Like with Washington, like Washington says, oh, we're going to roll with Howell. And I can see it because I really liked Howell and I think he deserves a chance. At the same time, if they roll with Howell and he's kind of whatever, they're not bad enough to where they're going to fall apart and get one of the top guys next year. The defense is too good. They have too many good receivers, and the offense is just talented enough that unless he is Josh Rosen level quarterback, they're not going to be bad enough. They're just going to be stuck in the middle. And you're stuck in the middle. You can't do anything. You've pretty much just wasted a year when you don't have your quarterback. Or you get Lamar, who's amazing, and yeah, he takes you to the playoffs, because the NFC is a total joke. You probably don't win the division because Philly and Dallas are awesome, but you're probably the sixth seed. You get into the playoffs and you're feeling much better about yourself. Yeah, you got to pay your quarterback $50 million a year, but guess what? They're about to get a new owner who isn't going to be Johnson, isn't going to be Snyder, isn't going to be a total joke and a cheap. So yeah, I mean, Washington makes a lot of sense. Indy, if they don't want one of the quarterbacks in the draft, or they don't like Levis or Richardson. So yeah, teams are just waiting out the Ravens, and I think whoever does sign him is going to be rewarded with a great player, and Baltimore is going to feel really dumb not paying Lamar Jackson whatever he's worth, because yes, he's a lot of money, but he makes you a whole lot better than you are, unless you're going to fall apart, because you lose Lamar, who are you getting to replace him?
Yeah, well, you mentioned that Washington Commanders, I think I've heard them mentioned quite a few times as a dark horse for Lamar, with the new ownership group potentially happening, you know, before or after the draft. What kind of, I mean, that's a franchise changing move to say, all right, go get Lamar.
The football side of things, from a operational perspective, they've become the worst franchise in the league in terms of fan investment, because everyone hates Dan Snyder's guts. The product on field is a total joke. Everything about that team is rotten to the core. The new ownership, take it coming over, especially if it's a beloved public figure like Magic Johnson as part of them. They come in, that sweeps off some of the grime of the past regime. You know what really gets fans back into the seats and makes them excited about the future is signing Lamar Jackson, getting an actual quarterback, and having people excited about the offense. Because the thing is, this new ownership group comes in, you look at what Washington is right now, that entire organization is lame ducks. Rivera is a lame duck. The front office is a lame duck. Bieniemy, he just went there. We'll see what happens there. But the new ownership group can do whatever they want, pretty much. If they want to go out and make a big splash to get Lamar, they push to the playoffs and try and make some noise, they can do that, because guess what? Rivera's just been straddling the line of 500 play his entire career. The front office is a joke. They can't say no to you. And guess what? Lamar, with Terry McLaurin, Dotson, Curtis Samuel, a good offensive line, Brian Robinson, a solid defense, that's a fun team. And if it's away from just the dirt and grime and just sleaziness and disgustingness of Dan Snyder, people would like that. The DMC would show out for them.
Well, that wraps Tennessee Titans talk for this week. We talked about pick 11 and pick 41. It's kind of all I care about, but there's other narratives everywhere. It's a fun time of year. Appreciate Landon and John being on with us tonight. We'll see you soon. Tighten up.
Tighten up.
Tighten up.